I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Electric relaxation time, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Betway. Scotland and Northern Ireland advance, and the DCL scored again. It's Friday 9th of October. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Vinicius Hunter-Raja.
Well, 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 everybody, we're back in your ears, and I bloody love international football. I don't know about you chaps. With or without fans, we want a few fans there, but let's not get into that. It was still great.
It was.
Mm-hmm. It was very, very good, yeah.
It was very, very good.
I've just got thrown there, because I thought, I'm going to lie to you here, because I don't much care for international football during the league season.
But you're not going to follow any friends around this table today, Vish, with that kind of attitude.
But yesterday was a lot of fun, because there was jeopardy, there was penalties at the same time.
Yes, exactly.
Synchronised penalties. Yes.
My goody.
Which not work, Marcus, is not worth it. Don't rise to it.
Well, he's coming around.
Let's just convince him with argument. With good conversation.
I've come to the marketplace of ideas. Talk to me.
Okay. I will bully international football into you. Gentlemen, before we talk about that, we have to say that it was another wonderful episode of On the Continent on Football Ramble Presents yesterday. Dotton Adebayo, Andy Brassel and Miguel Delaney looked at the precarious state of La Liga's top sides and discussed all the latest developments from this international break. You see, the international football still carries on the continent, and you'd be worth getting your ears around that lot, because there are other teams in international football than the British sides and the Irish sides and all the rest of it.
I could probably listen to Dotter and just read the phone book out, and that'd be a great podcast for me. Yeah. That's how much I love Dotter.
Oh yeah. Well, search Football Ramble Presents and subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode of On the Continent, which is the only place you need for the best European football chat.
Yes.
Now then, gentlemen, let's talk about some Scottish football chat. They're through. They're in the final, Vish. They beat Israel 5-3 on penalties. It was the first time Scotland were involved in extra time since 1961.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's an amazing statistic. I didn't know that.
I don't know what happened in 1961, but apparently...
Because they usually get the job done in the 90 minutes, Marcus. That's why.
Well, a job gets done.
Yeah. More so onto them.
Yes. Yeah, Vish, yeah. You, like a true Scotsman, sat through 120 minutes of this and then obviously got your award with a penalty shootout.
Yeah, I did. I did. I made a conscious choice early on. I'm going to watch a game with something on it.
Yeah.
And given I have a soft spot for Scotland, having spent many years up there, I thought, well, yeah, no, I'll give this a go. And I think had I not spent many years up in Scotland, I would have watched that game and thought, what on earth is this?
You wouldn't have given it a go.
No, but it was all very familiar. And I think that is exactly the kind of game where Scotland go into it looking to not so much spoil it, but just to hang back and end up spoiling themselves. And there was something a bit different about yesterday. It felt a bit more like they had more belief in what they were doing and the fact that they were kind of hanging back. Because they did have chances. You know, Israel played the much better football in terms of having the ball on the deck, but Scotland had more chances. And Israel seemed to struggle from not really having anyone who wanted to gamble in the box, perhaps scared by the mightiness of those jocks. but yeah, I wondered actually if the reason the Scotland players held their nerve for so long was because there weren't any fans there. Because a lot of the time, the fans are the ones who are like, for God's sake, not again.
You can feel it at Hampden.
It definitely affects it.
Yeah.
Like, we've had this discussion, haven't we, more broadly about whether we're seeing more goals because of no fans, for example. And there's been another theory which has been put out there, which is that, you know, the players aren't as fit, so they're not as mentally strong because there's a big link between physical and mental fitness. Mm-hmm. And so they're making mistakes. Mm. But I would frame it by saying, if you're in a big game, whether it's this, and there's a lot on this game, Fish, as you've already said, if you're a Scottish player and you're at Hampden and you're going through and on goal and there's no fans there, that's a different experience. There are loads of fans there.
Oh, it is, yeah.
And so you'd think it would work in their favour in that specific incident, right? So I think if you extrapolate that out, you can say the fans have a huge effect, or the lack of them has a huge effect, because in this case, it's probably helped them be a bit more conservative and not kind of go gung-ho and get caught out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, because sometimes you do see, and it's not just Scotland, but I suppose any team, when you hear the frustration for the fans, you might try and do something different just because you might lose a thread of what your actual plan was. Because it might be in the 70th minute, for example, and you might have been drained by just the... Because it's weird, isn't it? Being part of a crowd that is frustrated, it's, you know, there aren't boos per se, but it's just that mumble, that groan. I've been to a few England games at Wembley where that used to be kind of the backing track to a lot of those turgid friendlies. And maybe it helped. I certainly thought that with the penalties as well. And I thought it was interesting in the Northern Ireland game, they chose to take their penalties at the side of the ground without fans.
Yeah, because there was a few fans there. Mm. But I see what you mean by the lack of fans. But I don't know. I think it has an overall calming effect, which is good for strikers and bad for defenders. And the goals would probably testify to that, certainly in a Premier League, because the urgency that defenders may have of the kind of, you know, the intensity of it, they can relax a little bit too much. But the strikers, if they're more relaxed, there's less pressure going in on goal and they might try something a little bit different. So it is fascinating and it is playing its part. But Scotland, I mean, Scott McTominay missed a good chance early on not that early on, but there was a bit few of, as Ali McCoist said on the punditry on ITV after the game, he said, well done to the editor for getting 8 minutes out of that.
Did Ali McCoy say that?
I love old Coisty.
Yeah, he's great.
James McFadden on the Sky coverage was obviously beaming from ear to ear because they got through, and it was like, it's a terrible game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no good that. But I went through. Who cares?
I don't think what I like about it is
that's what it's all about. Like.
Yeah,
well,
it
of
is,
course,
yeah.
Get yourself through, because as you said, Israel probably played the better football. Did you think? We'll come on to the other games in a minute where it was perhaps a little bit more obvious. Certainly the case of Ireland, but did you think Israel should have gone through at the end? Because certainly at the end of extra time, they were pushing, even though Scotland strike the post. Yeah. But as you rightly said, Luke, it was never going in. But Weissman, you know, he nearly got on the end of it and so on. I thought Israel were looking better towards the end of extra time.
Well, I think they were looking better throughout. I just thought the better chances, the chances that didn't actually even translate into shots on goal fell to Scotland. Mm-hmm. I was going to say went to Scotland as if they'd created them. They definitely fell to them in the way that you might, you know, a conker might hit you on the head.
Or like that viral video from yesterday where a cat hit that man on the head.
Yeah.
And then got a telling off from a dog with boots on.
Yeah. Now, I'm aware to people listening to this.
It's not a cartoon.
That sounds like Marcus might have malfunctioned there. but that did actually happen. You have to search it online.
Oh, that was basically the game.
So who's the cat in this?
So the cat is Israel.
Chances.
Yeah, chances.
No. The man is Israel.
The cat is
Marshall in goal, coming down on him. And the dog
And the dog is football saying, right, all of you stop this. This is ridiculous.
And not in a good way.
Yeah.
I mean, even Steve Clarke had a smile on his face. I don't think I've ever seen him smile.
It's not a face that lends itself to smiling.
No, it was quite nice and quite odd at the same time.
I think if you spend all your career as an assistant manager, you can't smile, can you? Because they're always the ones barking out orders or just like standing next to a manager cross-armed.
I see what you mean. He said that...
He's not a jester.
He's not a jester.
He's managed a few teams like, as a first-team coach. Not for very long, admittedly, but he has.
He has, but I think he was a number two for a while.
He was.
I think that's maybe what Vish is getting at.
Also, when was the last Scotland manager that actually smiled?
Can't smile without you.
Bertie Vokes, Craigie Bruden.
That's true.
Bertie Vokes. I mean, he didn't have much to smile about when he was in the job, did
no,
he?
I know, but it was funny, wasn't it?
if I may wrestle this back slightly, is it a reasonable thing to say, and I'm going to find out on Twitter later,
that Mitrovic could take that defence apart?
Well, that's my second point. My second point is they obviously need to improve. They want to beat Serbia.
Yeah.
But is it a reasonable thing to say that Scotland, with the players they've got, should be... And I know they have players missing. I get that. And you guys mentioned that yesterday. But should they be beating a team like Israel, who, from what I can make out, I mean, this might lay bare my lack of knowledge of Israeli football, but I don't think they've got any good players.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Should well, please, take the floor. Take the floor.
Well,
Stuart Armstrong was quite a big miss.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's only a bit...
Israel are ranked like 99th in the world or something.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I don't think there was anything that Scotland did yesterday that was particularly reflective of the players they had. They just tried to get a job done, and you know, they did get it done.
So yeah. I understand the task is tough to navigate because it's a difficult challenge because the stakes are high and there's no fans, and we've covered a bit of that. But player for player, Scotland are a far better team than Israel.
I know what you're saying, but I think... I think Scotland would have still been quite nervous. You know, it was at Hampden. It's the kind of game that, you know, that whole thing of Scotland not having qualified for a major tournament since 98, that really does hang over them, I think. And this, you know, winning, you know, they've now got a 100% record in penalty shootouts. You know, it's things like that that really will sort of begin to help and so on. And I think actually them playing in Belgrade, you know, Scotland like to be the underdog. They like to have the backs of the walls and go away. So I think there is a little bit of belief, but I think the fact is that, you know, there's still this huge task in hand, and I think that is a little bit of a hangover. And if they can get to the Euros, I think that will be a huge monkey off.
That'd be amazing. I'd love to see them there.
One of the things about their squad now is that they do actually have players who can, you know, what. Obviously, against better teams, they're going to come unstuck if they play like that, if they back off too much. But they do have players who can change the game in an attacking sense. Mm-hmm. You know, bringing on Ryan Fraser as late as they did yesterday,
he's someone who can
run up. And, you know, they still... John Fleck, I think, was unused on the bench as well. So, you know, they have creative players. And...
But I think there's a lack of belief. I think
Tierney was missing.
But what you're touching on, Luke, I think there's a lack of belief. I think there is this case of... I mean, I just said it there, you know, they like to play with the backs of walls and so on, blah, blah, blah. But actually, having a bit of belief and going, actually, do you know what? We do have a few players. You know, look at the way Ireland played. You know, they should have gone through. And again, we will come onto them in just a sec. But sometimes, actually, you can get yourself into a mindset of, all right, we're a defensive team. Let's just restrict the opposition. Let's do all that. But actually, someone should turn around and say, well, actually, hang on a minute here. You can impose a little bit on the opposition as well. And Scotland, they did get through, but they didn't create very much at all. And they're playing Serbia in the final and in the playoff final. They're going to have to come up with something because we know Serbia have got a couple of decent players in there and Serbia will be favourites. So it'll be interesting to see. But take Northern Ireland away to Bosnia-Herzegovina. Northern Ireland could have won that game, you know, in regular time. Now, it was great for them to go through on penalties. Absolutely phenomenal. And they prepared for penalties, as Barraclough, the manager, said, you know, so that they're well drilled. But they have set themselves up with, you know, the previous manager having, you know, tough to beat, all that kind of stuff. Absolutely right. But they themselves went ahead. They went on the front foot at times. They were unlucky. They did create a few chances. Yeah, Bosnia-Herzegovina have a couple of chances of their own. It was a good old ding-dong, that one. It could have gone either way. But the fact is, they went there, and there were a few fans in the stadium. They created a few chances, and they showed, actually, you know what? We can do this. And I fancy them against Slovakia in that game in Belfast, you know?
Well, I feel that, like, when Barraclough comes in off the back of the previous manager who... did an incredible job. Like how they were able to do it.
Well, he set the foundation.
Yeah, was incredible with the resources that he had available to him, and he is a legend for what he was able to achieve. It's always really difficult to come in and follow that. And I know Barraclough was the under-21s manager, and they tried to get some kind of continuity there. Mm-hmm. And what they can do is they can build a team around this core group of a few players who play at a very high level. I know Stephen Davis's best years are going to be behind him because of his age. But he has been a player who has been, to me at least, I wouldn't be an expert on Southampton, but Stephen Davis is a really important player for Southampton at a very good level. I mean, that transition he used to take between defence and mid attack, where he used to carry the ball, he was important. He can do it against these kind of teams still now. And you've got players like Johnny Evans, who as far as I'm concerned, is still a very, very good Premier League level defender. Craig Cathcart's hugely experienced and played in the Premier League. You know, there's loads of players, not loads, but there's a few players.
Jamal
isn't there,
Lewis as well, yeah.
Jamal Lewis is a great example. There's the issue is, where do the goals come from? And you've got Carl Lafferty, who scored a handful for them, maybe 20 or so goals for them. But other than that, it's not a huge amount of goals in the team, so they have to be really tight. Mm-hmm. But I agree, I think they've got an amazing esprit de corps, then. They've got an amazing group who just know their jobs. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is at international level, because you don't get much time to work with the players, because it's a lot more about camaraderie and simple stuff. They've got a chance for sure.
Yeah, with Peacock Farrell in goal as well. They've got a character there. Did you see the first penalty which Pjanic took? He was pointing to the side.
Yeah, he loves it.
He's pointing to his right. Pjanic just stuck it in that corner. I think Pjanic had a little word with him as well.
Pjanic kicked the ball back at him as well.
Yeah.
And then pointed to the ref, so almost said, like, I'll keep an eye on him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And they did.
Yeah. I forgot to mention Stuart Dallas as well. Obviously, important player for Leeds as well.
Big Dallas. Yeah, but I think it was great for Davis to get his 120th cap. And in the words of Pat Jennings, he has been a good little player for Northern Ireland.
Pat Jennings is a lovely fellow as well. I met him once. He's a very nice chap.
Yeah. He's a nice big fella.
I'm sure he didn't mean anything by it.
Just remove that word.
He had a pop at Pat Jennings. He had a pop at Stephen Davis yesterday.
I just quoted Pat Jennings. Yeah. That's all I've done.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about how highly regarded Steve Davis was at Southampton.
Great break builder as well.
Yeah. Stephen Davis.
The nugget. Yeah. Pochettino said that he was his Iniesta.
That's right.
There we go. You guys mentioned that yesterday. Yeah.
Marcus, who's your Iniesta in your life? In your life. Yeah, yeah.
What is it I've played for?
Just in your life is someone who puts you in areas that you never thought you'd be in, good way.
There's Luke.
Not Pete.
there's Luke. I mean, Pete and Jim, of course. Andy Brassel.
Yeah.
Jules, Kate.
I thought you said not women.
One of them.
You said not the original cast.
All right. Andy Brassel then. Or yeah. Jules or Kate. Yeah. One of those three. All right.
Should we move on?
Yeah. Nice to see Washington and Boyce coming on. Yeah. Love that when the manager brings on two penalty takers right at the end.
And the players that he brought them on for had already come on.
Yeah. I think they were quite relieved, probably, because he basically said, they didn't have, they weren't good penalty takers. You know,
that's quite a lot of pressure, though.
It
especially
is.
Especially on a forward player coming on to be like, right, you've got to do now is take a penalty, and if he messes up, you've ruined the nation.
Yeah.
The only reason you're anywhere near the pitch is for this reason.
Well, they both stuck him away, though.
Yep.
I mean, Boyce got the winner, didn't he? Which is probably the best penalty. Was it Boyce top corner? I forget which one it was. But yeah, that is delightful for the manager, because if they come on and miss, and we've seen that before in penalty shootouts as well. So they march on. And like I say, against Slovakia in Belfast, you wouldn't put it past Northern Ireland winning that, because Slovakia will count themselves very fortunate that they're in that final, because Ireland should have won. They created opportunities. Hourihan was one who missed a chance towards the end of the game. The Irish will be gutted today that they're not there.
I thought Slovakia, they will, and that's right.
But Ireland, Ireland should have won, and you would fancy them against Northern Ireland probably, although Northern Ireland, we've just talked them up there. So, if you're a fan of Ireland, I think today wouldn't be a very good one.
No, and, I understand that Ireland... Yeah, I disagree slightly, chiefly because I just think Slovakia had a lot of chances as well. And I thought it was a very even game.
Well, okay.
It could have gone either way. I totally understand what you mean. I know that... did you already mention something? Ireland hit the woodwork as well at one point. But I thought Slovakia had their own chances too. But it's disappointing. Chiefly because I'd like to have seen an Ireland v Northern Ireland final, which would have been wicked.
Nice to see Roddack, though, Fulham's goalkeeper.
Is it?
Yeah.
Not seen with the pressure off. Yeah. Might keep a clean sheet here.
Well, he was a big part of Fulham going up last season. I'm going to enjoy him. He's having a good time.
He's a good goalkeeper. Yeah. He's a good goalkeeper. He's not playing at the moment for Fulham, though, right?
No. He's playing for Slovakia.
Yeah. So, technically speaking, he's not to blame for Fulham being the worst defensive team the Premier League's ever seen.
No.
You could almost argue that that's why he had quite a good game.
Yeah. There's a clean sheet there.
Do I have to go back?
Can I just keep playing for Slovakia?
November, is it? Well, I just stay here.
By the time I get there, I have to come back again.
Oh dear, yeah. It was only Stephen Kenny's third game in charge, and Ireland losing another penalty shootout. Not too in microcosm, a similar sort of record with England on penalties.
Matt Doherty rattling the crossbar as well.
Yeah.
But how much of a not free pass, because the stakes are obviously very high, but how much sympathy do you have with someone like Stephen Kenny, who never really thought he would be in the job in this position in the first place because of what happened with the change to the football calendar? Or do you think you've got to put that behind you now? It's your third game in and you've got to do the job.
Well, you do have to put it behind you, obviously. But I do feel a bit sorry for him because this is the same Ireland team that was not long ago was under Mick McCarthy. Now, Big Mick, as much as we love him, he's not known for his entertaining brand, is he? As Dion Fanning once said, you know, he'd bite your hand off for a one-all draw. And McCarthy, you know, they didn't play. See, again, I'm going back to what I said about Scotland and Northern Ireland. It was that kind of, right, you know, we're limited players. We've got to play in this style. Well, actually, Kenny, I think, got a bit of creativity out of them. I personally think they should have won the game. They created enough chances because they have a few players there that can do something. And against Slovakia, you know, they're going toe-to-toe. And yes, they kept the clean sheet. Obviously, you know, the goalkeeper, Randolph, made a few saves and so on. But there is a little bit of creativity in that side. There's a little bit of something, you know.
Yeah, they cut through them quite a few times.
Yeah.
David McGoldrick in particular. I'm a big McGoldrick fan. But he was basically running things from just dropping off and like putting people through. Alan Brown was quite unlucky as well.
Yeah, he was.
He obviously missed the penalty, but also had a couple of chances in regulation time as well.
Do you know what? I mean, you say that about McGoldrick, and I've got no reason to have a pop at the guy.
But he's
32, and he's only ever scored one goal for Republic of Ireland, right? So I think what makes a real difference, and I alluded to it when we were talking a bit earlier about Northern Ireland or Scotland or whatever. What really separates those kind of mid-ranking international teams? I'm not talking about the top level because, you know, England are always going to produce players. Mm-hmm. Belgium have got this moment. You know, Germany, Spain, all these teams are always going to produce players. The mid-ranking ones, it really matters if you can bring through a kind of generational goal scorer.
Yeah.
Because you go through the squad list of a lot of the home nations and you go, okay, they've got no goals in their team. Like the top scorer in that squad for Ireland is Shane Long, who's 33. He's played 84 times for Ireland. He's scored 17 goals. He's their top scorer, right? And do you remember when Northern Ireland had like David Healy, who would just for some reason when he played for Northern Ireland, he would just score. You know, hat-trick against Spain, was it? Hat-trick against England as well, and that makes a real difference.
Yeah,
this
he scored against England. It was a hat-trick. Yeah,
yeah, but he scored a hat-trick against Spain.
He did, yeah.
So I think that makes a real difference. And you've seen that with Wales, who, of course, I know we're going to come on to them later, but they didn't have Ramsey for weird reasons and they didn't have Bale. But that makes a real difference for Wales. Well, Wales can then trouble the back end of an international tournament because of those players who just elevate them to that higher level.
Well, as you say with the home nations, you know, Scotland have struggled a little bit with the goal scorer. I mean, McFadden was one they looked to, you know, about sort of 10, 12 years ago, whenever that was. And then Northern Ireland, you mentioned, and then Wales have now they're kind of sharing the goals around a bit. And then you go, you know, obviously not one of the home nations distinctly, but Ireland, you know, they missed sort of Robbie Keane or something like that, you know. So having that goal scorer makes a hell of a difference, and that's why I'm concerned for Scotland, because in Serbia do have that goal scorer in Mitrovic, you know, he does score a few there, and Milinkovic-Savic is a player and so on and so forth. But anyway, we look forward to the finals, and hopefully Scotland and Northern Ireland can do it, because it would be good to see some of those sides there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have a quick break, and then we're going to talk about good old England.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watch with Jesus the 25 minutes first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, before we talk about England, it's time for this.
Just even a show!
He's copied his own homework there.
Yeah. It's a big departure from his original sound, as I said.
When I listened to that for the first time on the show, I instantly counted all the people that he's named in there because I thought Pete will definitely miss someone out.
Yeah.
And that'll be an international incident.
That's why it took so long, basically. He got it back and I thought, I've missed Lucas. I've got Luke in, but I missed Jim this time.
I think it's much more likely that he includes an extra name in, and when we ask him about it, he'll be like, you know that bloke who always stands away facing the corner? do you not see him?
You probably just haven't been on the show with him yet, but you will at some point.
Yeah. He's talking to me all the time.
He's 8 feet tall. Watches he's got really sleep. Long fingers. He watches me sleep. He's on my chest while I sleep.
Can't get up in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, some people have emailed show@footballramble.com. Vish! Who's emailed it? Go on.
Alistair Cole.
Ah, Coley.
Has used his fingers, his long fingers, to email us.
Could be normal size.
Yeah.
You're obsessed with hand size.
No, well, yeah, in a way. Only Kate, actually, because they're monstrous. My mate once explained to me how his dad's biggest gripe in football was bringing everyone back to defend a corner. So when he had the chance to coach his sons under 15s, he had his chance to impart his football genius. Mm. He instructed six of the fastest players to stand on the halfway line, preparing for the counterattack. To his credit, attacking teams would often see this and put six men back
right.
And only send three up so they didn't concede. That said, my friend had also explained that if any team had the balls to ignore the six players on the halfway line and just load the box, it was almost certainly a goal.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting game of chicken, that. Like, are you gonna take the bait or not? Mm-hmm. Because if you just stick to your plan, you'll probably score. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's almost like a bit of gamesmanship there, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. And I think... I feel like more often than not, those six players on the halfway line would work in your favour. I think, you know, it, provided you don't really care about conceding three goals in 10, if you're going to create seven chances out of those 10.
It's Kevin Keegan-esque, and I'm here for it. Yeah. I'm here for it. I like it when kind of they're normally the father of one of the players at that level. Mm. I like it when they think there's some kind of Guardiola type team.
Yeah.
I imagine all over the country tomorrow morning will be under 15s teams whose the coach manager has told them to sit back right to the side of each side of the 6 yard box and get a small pass from the goalkeeper and concede the goal because they are not able to do it. But that's just how it goes.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting idea because you're so used to one staying up. You know, from the defending team, they obviously the striker stays up, and then you just have two defenders back, and then everyone packs.
And normally fullbacks are their quickest.
Yeah, and so this is like would sort of shock teams, and they would be like, that disrupts what we're doing. However, at that level of football, what I would say is, from a defending point of view, I would sort of suggest that you probably want as many players in the box as possible, because actually, from an attacking point of view, if you had say four defenders and three attackers in the box for a corner, I would prefer that than having, say, eight or nine defenders and seven or eight attacking players, because it's just more of a bit of a pinball.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Also, bear in mind that you've only then got four defenders back. So you've got someone covering the front post, you know, just to block it out of the earliest possible opportunity. And then you've got three players in to mark, you know, the forwards. Yeah. That is quite dangerous.
That's why you need a big, strong keeper.
But then also, though, do you know what?
Come and get everything.
Do you know what I'd actually do is, if they put six players up, I'd go, thanks very much. We massively outnumber you in your own box.
Thank you for my favourite food. Especially with Speller's pace. Maybe not so much these days, but back in the day.
Powering in to head the corner?
Get your earplugs in because you wear the hamstrings twanging all over the place.
I've never had a hamstring injury.
But yeah.
He's not sensitive about it. Don't worry about it.
Keep up this attitude.
No, it's not to do with sensitivity. It's to do with facts, brother. It's to do with facts. But yes, I think I'd love to see it implemented, just not for a side I'm playing
for. You need to have people shouting, the manager shouting from the sidelines, mad stuff that's just going to confuse the players.
Yeah.
You need overcomplicated tactics for kids. And that's kind of how it works in England. It did when I was a kid anyway. I hope these days it's much more along the lines of, let's be nice and positive, let's enjoy playing football with our friends. Mm. But I suspect that isn't the case.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, what would our man Big Show Pav do?
Pav, who is the, you know,
we spoke about Pav the other day.
The legendary Ramble goalkeeper, who is featured in the Ramble book as well, which is probably out of print now, but if you can find a copy in a bargain bin somewhere, we talk about him in there. He just never shut up. So it was like, I'd play at the back, he would play as a goalkeeper, and he would never shut up. And you had to kind of navigate the rhetorical assault as well as the attacking from the other team as well. He would shout all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if the ball was coming down the line, you were going across the cover, he would scream, I need to see a shoe. As in, shoe him up, as in foul him, just kick him. And he would have a go at you if you made a mistake in a really sarcastic way, which made you feel worse. So, for example, if you're a one-on-one with an attacker and the attacker went round you, you'd hope the goalkeeper would be setting himself ready to save a shot. Pav would say sometimes, oh, fuck you now, I'll pay for you to get back in. So, yeah, just that kind of stuff, really. So, yeah.
It's absolutely superb. Yeah. But I didn't realise, though, when myself or, I don't know, Pete Donaldson or whoever we had in attack was running through a goal, he was saying stuff.
Oh, yeah, he'd be like, he would just mumble under his breath, like, if someone went in on goal for our team and he wanted them to score, from back in goal, he would kind of mumble under his breath, but obviously he's really loud, so you could always hear it. He'd be like, I need to see some dinner.
Yeah.
I need to see you have your dinner there. Get your dinner. And if you missed, you go, absolutely starving. He is starving today. Yeah.
Absolutely love that.
He's actually a really good keeper as well.
And
if he just shut up, he'd be better.
Yeah. No.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. Because he was always shouting at you. That's why he wanted to shut up. Yeah. I've got one here from Joseph Colomy, who says, hello, Ramble Gang. With all the Gunnosaurus chat of late and the subsequent deep dive into the world of mascots in this past Wednesday's episode with Jules, Vish and Luke, I thought I'd chime in about it. While I cannot speak for the situation for high-profile mascots in England and whether they are dedicated full-time to one character or freelancing shapeshifters, I can speak of personal experience here in the United States. I worked for several years in the marketing in college athletics with iconic mascots such as the Duck at University of Oregon, Sparky the Sun Devil at Arizona State University nice. As well. Generally, we had a team of masketeers who would perform shifts in the suits at events or even swapping out between quarters of American football
games. Oh, my God. Mesut Ozil will be fuming.
Oh, my goodness.
He's actually got to pay the salary of about 15 people.
However, on occasion, there would need to be a non-professional to fill the role in a pinch, and that's where I came in. I am proud to have made several cameo mascot appearances. I was Sparky the Sun Devil for a couple of TV commercial shoots and even made a live appearance on Good Morning Arizona as an anthropomorphic bowl of instant mashed potatoes for a sponsor at Arizona State.
That's
it's a sentence I never thought I'd read, which is why I sort of stumbled through it.
It's better than the boiler. It's a bowl of mashed potatoes.
Well, you'd need the boiler to power the microwave to create those.
Yeah.
Potatoes,
in golf
is
events.
That how microwaves work? Are they powered by boilers?
I don't think so, mate. No, I think you might be in trouble if you've got a water powered microwave. But you know, in golf events in the US, a lot of the fans there shout mashed potatoes.
Oh yeah,
when Hang the on. Ball is hit. So but maybe it's something to do with that.
They're the worst people in the world,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah,
I was shouting that. I didn't even know that, bruv.
Yeah,
the one I was saying the other day that you know people should shout weird things.
Mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes. Made that up, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe I was influenced by them. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, there we are, ladies. Gentlemen, show at foot. Would you want to do it again?
Yeah, I hit it again.
All right, okay.
I think it's this one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just email the show at footballramble.com right now. So, Peter, Vish, or Kate, or Jules, or Jim, or Andy, Luke, all my kids can read it out. Well done.
The passion with the well done at the end is what gets it for me.
Oh, absolutely right.
It gets into like a proper, like, bellowing register there.
Oh, doesn't he just? Right then, gentlemen, England beat Wales 3-0. Hey, hey. Go on, the boys. Mm. Good goals from good men. I love Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I love how he loves it as well. I know a lot has been said about Connor Cody. I love all that as well. But DCL, oh my goodness, he's just marvellous.
He seems fantastic as a lad.
Yes.
And he's a great player. What's he got, 10 goals now?
Yeah.
10 goals already this season, Vish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a killer smile as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I know, you know...
You want to see him do well.
We're not, you know, we're not impartial to the human form, but he's a stunningly good-looking man.
He is, yeah. I think I can speak on behalf of all Scots, Welsh, Northern Irish and Irish people and say that they want him to do really well for England.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Yeah, definitely, especially the Scots, actually.
Yeah.
They had their section the first half. Who cares?
Yeah, but it was a great header, and him and Grealish linked very well, and Grealish was another real bright spark for England in this 3-4-3 formation. Now, I was sort of unconvinced yesterday when talking about it, and I know this is only a friendly, and I know Wales weren't at full strength, neither were England, but Wales weren't, it's important to say that. And England weren't that great in the first half. They sort of grew into the game. But look, what did you make of that formation? Would you fancy England to play that against Belgium?
I like it. And mm-hmm. I disagreed with you when you said that you weren't sure about it, but bearing in mind, I only listened mm-hmm. to that this morning after the game. So it's easy for me to be wise after the game.
Well, I wasn't sure. That wasn't a lie.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. You are, in my opinion, you are a very, very good authority on England. So
that's very
your opinion is, of course, valid. I just felt that for the players that we have, mm-hmm. or certainly the players he's got available to him at the moment in this squad, I think it suits them. And I'll give you a few examples. It suits Saka on the mm-hmm. left. Mm-hmm. It suits Connor Cody playing in a three. I think he's absolute. If England are going to play a three, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that Connor Cody is already absolutely key mm-hmm. because he's played in such a consistent way in a three mm-hmm. at such a good level for such a long time. His reliability is incredible.
Leadership skills.
His leadership is really important. His passion to play for England, I know it gets kind of derided, but that's really important as well. So it suits him. It suits Calvin Phillips, mm-hmm. In my view, who I thought was outstanding last night. I thought he, you know, I understand why Jack Grealish got Man of the Player of the Match and why Jack Grealish was caught the eye, because he's that type of player. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big fan, as regular listeners to this show will know, of the metronomic kind of nice and sensible, recycle possession type player in midfield.
Well, him and Wings, they can do that.
I think Phillips is the best player at that I've seen since Carrick.
Ooh.
And I think Carrick is very, very underrated anyway, for what he wasn't able to do for England for a number of different reasons that I think were outside his control. The only caveat I'd add is that they won, with the greatest respect to Wales, defensively they were abysmal. Mm-hmm. Their marking in the box was non-existent. I mean, it was like almost like an avant-garde approach to defensive marking, and I don't think Phillips found it very difficult up against what he was up against in midfield, and he will have a harder challenge than that. And of course, because of his lack of experience at the very top level, there will still be question marks over him. But I've spoken to a decent amount of people who've played against him and who know loads more about football than me, who say that he is the real deal, and he's going to get better and better. And his positional awareness, his decision making, his engine, his range of passing, I don't know if you remember, but last night he played a couple of short ones and he made that one right over the top perfectly to feet. He can do everything in that role. I'm very excited about him, as you can probably tell.
Yeah, so what do you reckon then, Vish? Because it was a bit of a, you know, he wasn't the most keenly sort of or hotly sort of contested matches. That's no reflection on anybody. That was just the nature of a friendly with no fans and blah, 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 blah. But against Belgium, it's going to be one hell of a test for England against the number one ranked side in the world. What would you do if you're Southgate? Would you go for a 3-4-3? Because as Luke says, I understand. See, for me, I want to play 3-5-3. I want an extra man in there.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Every formation I say, I think 4-3-3, I want an extra centre back. 3-5-2, I want an extra one up front.
Yeah. For years it was almost like England can't play a two in midfield because they get overrun.
Yeah.
Everyone says that.
Yeah.
So I understand what you mean.
But with a 4-3-3, you worry about the defence. So I understand he wants the back three and he wants a front three as well. So this is the formation that seems to kind of satisfy that. Those two areas.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that you were saying this is the ideal formation for Saka. I agree with you in the sense that this is the best way of getting him in, but I thought defensively he was a bit like lost yesterday. But I say that as someone who admittedly only had one eye on the game.
Well, of course he won't start.
The jocks had my affection.
Yeah, sure. He won't start in that position.
No, of course.
What,
yeah.
Maybe what I should have expanded the point and said Ben Chilwell can play there,
yeah,
and Ben Chilwell can, in my opinion, can do that job on the left, and you've probably got Saka as a backup.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we could actually run rings around ourselves here talking about how England might fare against, on paper, the best team in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think for that 3-4-3, provided the players can get used to it, and also, more broadly, that Southgate can actually tell those midfielders in particular, what he actually wants from them. I suppose the centre-backs as well. Because I think yesterday I thought it was a little bit muddled at times when I went back to rewatch bits of it. And I thought that if you're going to have this kind of line, essentially we're going to have a complete line change going into that Belgium game. And you're going to have to hope that even those established players, even players like Henderson, when they come into that system, you're going to have to, you know, I suppose, tweak them a little bit and tell them exactly where you need them at certain times. And presumably Southgate wouldn't play this formation without having that idea in his head that he's able to articulate, which is fine. I actually think, though, when I looked at that lineup yesterday, I think it was easy to flippantly dismiss it as an England B side. Mm-hmm. When you could look at it from, you know, from the top down, I think all these players have a legitimate right to be here and to be in that conversation for the squad come the Euros next summer. And I also think what was really, really fundamentally important from Fenley's, and something that I haven't seen for a while, actually, probably a bit more in the Southgate era, but not so much before that, is that the important thing about getting England players who deserve a call-up in those situations and giving them caps is that they bring with them an enthusiasm that can sometimes get lost when you're an England player who's just used to getting into the cycle of squads and
100%.
This, that and the other.
I
think that's so important to see people who deserve to be there but who also want to be there and love being there as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the things that Southgate in particular has been very good at. I think I mentioned it on the show before, but off the back of the 2018 World Cup, he said to those group of players, he was like, look, you all know how professional football works. You all know now how international football works. This has been a great deal of fun for all of us. But never forget this moment, because it will never happen to you again.
That's right.
It will never happen to this group of players again. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the best way of cultivating that. Just that approval of how great it is to be here. Mm-hmm. And it is little things like seeing Dominic Calvert-Lewin so over the moon to be greeted by Gareth Southgate when he rocks up, to see Cody's face when he scores that goal at the end. I think those little things, while it's easy to, you know, put too cute a spin on it, I think they really do matter for maintaining that kind of team environment.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, when Saka talked about being called up as well, you know, he was absolutely delighted. And Ings getting his goal as well, you know. This is all good stuff. And Southgate now has a job. And Luke, you've spoken about this before, that you then don't go, right, nice one, lads. Anyway, all on the bench, blah, 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 bring in the established. But I don't think, other than, say, Kane and Sterling, and maybe one or two others, I don't think there is too many people who are like odds on for kind of starting positions. But we've got to talk about Jack Grealish, because, you know, wonderful for England to have that type of dribbler in the side. I know they've got some people who can dribble, like Sancho and Sterling. Obviously, you know, they weren't involved last night at all. But the way Grealish plays, he actually takes the pressure off the defence, the way he can hold on to the ball, the winning of fouls and so on. But again, when you find a player, Cody seems to be this type of player. Hopefully Calvert-Lewin, or it's early days. Hopefully Phillips, again, early days. And Grealish as well. These types of players, when they take to it very quickly to international football. And some players, you know, they might get a chance and they don't do very well at the start, and then they come back and they take it all.
Now, there's a freedom to this play, isn't there, Grealish?
There is. And I think when players, they manage to translate their club form to international football very quickly, you think, hang on a minute, this is something that we've got to go with here.
Yeah, I think he's a tremendously exciting player. And he's improved. He looks to have improved a great deal. I agree with, I think it was Andy who said it yesterday, I think he looks to have improved a great deal again already from the start of this season. So he's clearly a player whose ceiling's very high. And I suppose if I was going to temper it a little bit, I would say that what I'd like to see him work on is just the acknowledgement that there's different challenges for different types of opponents. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is, can he work on his incision? Mm-hmm. I understand, Marcus, you make a completely fair point that he can relieve the pressure off a defence. So if you're 2-1 up in a big game for England and 25 minutes to go, you bring Grealish on, he can carry the ball, he can bring players into play, he can really dominate possession and change the tempo of the game for England.
And he's very quick. Sometimes something, because of his style and the way his sort of body shape is, sometimes people might not.
He glides past players as well.
He's very quick.
But the point I want to make was just that sometimes you can see him carrying the ball a bit too long.
Yeah.
Sometimes you see he takes two or three extra touches when perhaps he doesn't need to. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to be worked on that I can see. But
that relates to what he's doing for Villa. And then that's something that needs to be ironed out when he's playing for England. When you've got the option of Harry Kane there to slip him through or something
quite,
like that.
That's what I'm saying. So at the start of the point, I was just saying that an acknowledgement that there's different challenges for different types of opponents is something that it'd be great if he added to his game. But look, England have got an amazing array of players
what
to
like
choose
about just
from.
On Grealish, though, I don't know why, he reminds me slightly playing style of Chrissy Waddle.
Do you know what it is?
I understand what you mean.
And I like that. I do like that.
Chrissy Waddle. Do you know what it is about Grealish? And when I say this, I'm not saying that he is the second best player that England have at their disposal, but he is one of those players that seem to have an infectious way about him in the way he plays. Mm-hmm. And he seems to, you know, his calm rubs off on everyone else. And maybe it's the way that he carries the ball, but he seems to raise everyone around them and almost give them the belief that they can do what he does.
Exactly.
Because it's quite simple as well. It's not in the kind of Ronaldinho sense of, let me do all the magic stuff. Mm-hmm. He's just like, no, come play with me.
Yeah.
He has that almost, he turns it into a five-a-side game when he gets the ball, because he turns small spaces into, now come, we can do this. We can all do this together. Yeah. And I think that's such a great skill. And only I think Harry Kane has that in that England squad. That's not to say that he should be the second name on the team sheet. Uh-huh. I just say that as someone who could potentially have more of a role from the bench than maybe start, even though I kind of think he should start if they can find a way to get him in, I think it's invaluable, and it's going to be so important with England playing those tougher games.
You need characters like that. The England sides from the past, you know, you think of those sides that, say, Waddle played in or sort of Shearer and Sherringham and those kind of players. They were big characters, and they would do that. They would pick people and go, right, come on. And England over the years have sometimes sort of lacked that a little bit at times.
And it's a different challenge, because what are the things that Jadon Sancho, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford can do that will hurt you, right? It's pace. Like, Rashford's a brilliant finisher. Mm. Sterling has improved his goal scoring a great deal. We know that. Jadon Sancho has got a lot to his game. I'm not trying to denigrate them. But what I'm saying is the primary fear you would have lining up against those three players is pace.
Yep.
Now, Grealish isn't slow, but that's not what you're concerned about when you play against Grealish. So what it does is it presents you a different challenge. So if you get him on the left of a three, like he plays for Villa, and you have Sancho or Sterling on the other side, or whatever it may be, or even Rashford a bit wider, you've almost got a load of things to think about. Mm-hmm. Another way of approaching it is you have the pace, you start with pace, and then you bring Grealish on, as we've talked about. Or you start with Grealish, then you bring pace on. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of things, there are a lot of different challenges that you can offer, present to an opponent that they've got to figure out, which is a really exciting thing for England.
It is. It very much is.
So very quickly, I think on those, you know, those wide players you mentioned there, they kind of create their own energy, whereas Grealish creates his own momentum, where he's able to kind of just from a standing start, just create something that brings everyone towards it. Whereas I think with those wide players you talked about, they get into a mode and suddenly they're rushing you. Yeah. Whereas mm-hmm. Grealish can just rush you from a standing start.
I'm gonna generate some big Betway 4 to Score energy right now.
Go on then, Ultimate.
That's what
go
I'm
on
gonna then. Do. Because it's time for Betway 4 to Score. Entry, mm-hmm. of course, is free each week.
Each John Wick.
Pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the £50,000 jackpot. International week is no different. But make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. And further T's and C's apply. Game one feels to you, Vish. It's Ukraine v Germany on Saturday night.
I'm going for Serge Gnabry. Mm-hmm.
Serge Gnabry, good choice.
He loves goals.
Do the old pot. Do it to the camera. Do the old pot stirring.
Mix me up.
Game two is me. I'm on a hat trick, you guys. I wasn't that going to pass us by. But I'm on a hat trick. I've got Spain v Switzerland also on Saturday night. I'm going for Rodrigo.
Mm.
I think he came off the bench in their last game, but I think he'll start. I'm going for Rodrigo. Mm-hmm. I thought about Ansu Fati, so I'll be annoyed if he scores first.
Yeah.
But I'm going for Rodrigo. Game three is the big one. Sunday tea time, England v Belgium, and it fell to Jules Breach to make her pick.
Hello, you lovely lot. It's pretty hard to predict who's even going to start for England against Belgium, let alone predict the first goal scorer. But I reckon after Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored on his senior England debut and he got taken off before the 60th minute in that friendly against Wales, I reckon he just might start the Belgium game, you know? So I'm going to go for a DCL goal.
Bold.
Very nice. So Dominic Calvert-Lewin for Jules. Marcus, you've got France v Portugal Sunday night.
Yeah, well, I know that Giroud's been among the goals and you've got all the usuals. Cristiano Ronaldo's going to spoil the party.
There we go. A good, solid selection. So that is for our 4 to Score selection. Serge Gnabry, Rodrigo, Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Ronaldo for our chance to win the £50,000 jackpot, which we'll give to charity if our selections all score first. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game and further T's and C's apply. 18 plus and do gamble responsibly. And for more information on that, head to begambleaware.org. Okay, now it's time for this. It's one of those games that's quite difficult to explain, but you'll get it as soon as you start hearing it. And for those of you who, or everyone who can't see what's happening right now, when I pressed that intro button, Vish closed his laptop, grabbed his notepad, had a quick swig of water, and looked across to Marcus, who just smiled back with his arms folded. It is time for the very high stakes Luke's game. Fire in the belly, mm-hmm. head in the freezer. We're running super short time, so I'm just going to get straight into it. People should know how it works by now. Vish, you're up first this time.
No pressure, Vish.
No pressure.
I My know. Head's in the fire.
belly in the freezer, head in the fire. The first player who's played for 9 clubs. He retired in 2015. His name is Luke Chadwick.
Oh, Chadders.
Oh, Christ.
9 clubs in total.
That's ridiculous.
I think I might have to go for 3.
Marcus, can I see better than 3?
I'll go 4.
4? Vish, 5 from you? I wouldn't write it down such big font if I were you, mate, because I can see that easily.
Are you looking at the camera? Yeah. You know what, go.
4. Let me hear Marcus, 4 clubs that Luke Chadwick's played for in your own time, one at a time, please.
Manchester United.
That is obviously correct.
Stoke City.
Also correct. Well done.
And this is where I am.
This is where the bluff comes home to roost.
Yeah. Norwich City. One more.
Very good.
And
I'm actually very impressed by this because when this came up, I thought, no, I mean, I could get it.
Notts County.
Afraid not. It's a valiant effort. Manchester United is where he started. You could have had Royal Antwerp, Reading, Burnley, West Ham, Stoke City, Norwich, Milton Keynes Dons, and Cambridge United.
MK Dons were the ones. Wow. Well, got mixed up with Notts County.
1-0 to Vish, but the good news is, Marcus, mm-hmm. you are up first this time.
Here I go.
He's played for 6 clubs. He's still playing.
Oh.
It's Olivier Giroud.
Ah. Oh.
6 clubs.
Oli Giroux, you're having a laugh. I'll go three.
Vish?
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as it sounds.
I might set you with three then.
Really?
Yeah, I've done really well by not playing this game while okay. playing this game.
Fair enough.
Three clubs?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, here we go. One at a time, please.
Montpellier.
Very good.
Cock.
Arsenal. And Chelsea.
One all. Oh, Vish, you're back in your box now, aren't you, big boy?
Oh. So what were the other clubs?
I wish everyone listening could see the body language. Started off at Grenoble. Apologies for my French pronunciation. Grenoble, whatever you want to say. He played on loan for a club which I believe is pronounced Istra. Then he was at Tours and then Montpellier, Arsenal. It's not as easy as it sounds, that one. Vish, you're up first this time. It's 1-0, all to play for. He's played for five clubs. He retired, sadly, in 2012. Five clubs in total. You might see him on the media here or there. It's Neil Mellor. Quite a tough one this week. The algorithm generated quite a lot of a lot of strange players.
Mm-hmm. Neil Mellor, Ella, A. Five clubs. Five football association clubs.
Come on. Now that it's raining Ronald. More than ever, tell me how many clubs. Fucking Neil Mellor.
I'm going to start with three.
Yeah.
That's good, three.
Name them.
There we go. So one at a time, please, Vish.
Liverpool. Preston North End.
Oh.
Blackburn Rovers.
Yes! Did he play for Sheffield Wednesday?
He did.
Yeah.
Oh. 2-1 to Marcus.
Oh, I
did
knew
he play
that.
Tranmere Rovers? Oh.
He didn't, no. He played for Liverpool, spent some time on loan at West Ham, some more time on loan at Wigan, Preston North End, and then Sheffield Wednesday.
I've seen him play for Sheffield Wednesday.
I knew Liverpool and Sheffield Wednesday. When you said Preston, I thought, he's got it.
I should say, actually, he spent some time on loan at Sheffield Wednesday, but he ended his career, I believe. He finished at Preston North End back then. Yeah. So that's 2-1 to Marcus Speller.
I think anyone who comes from the North West, I'm at Preston.
Yeah.
Loan spell at Preston.
I go Tranmere for some reason, but Preston's probably more likely.
Marcus, you're up first this time for the fourth player. He's played for seven clubs in total. He retired in 2012. You're going to like this one. You're all going to like this one. And the people listening are just going to love to hear his name.
Yeah.
Hernan Crespo.
Oh, here we go.
Seven clubs in total.
Seven clubs in total. That is quite something. Big Crespo. Why are you doing this to me? Seven clubs. Right, come on. Get that head.
I'm going to need an answer now. I'm going to need a number.
Five.
Five is good.
Fucking hell.
People listen at home. Vish looked like he was about to be hit by a car when he heard that.
Go ham. Go ham with five.
So this is to win.
Yeah.
This is for 3-1. Unassailable lead. Five clubs Hernan Crespo's played for. One at a time, please.
Why didn't I say three? AC Milan. Chelsea. Inter. Parma.
One more for the win.
River Plate.
Is River Plate one of them? For a win for Marcus.
Marcus!
There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Very good.
Lazio as well?
Yeah, you didn't say Lazio.
Sure enough now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seven clubs. River Plate, Parma, Lazio, Inter, Chelsea, Milan, Inter again, Genoa, and Parma again.
Oh, Genoa,
yeah. Yeah, sorry, Genoa, not Genoa. That's 3-1. That will squeeze in the final one. You'll be first. It's seven clubs. Need this super quick, please, mate. Seven clubs that Christian Benteke has played for.
Ooh. Bentex.
Listen, mate, your fountain pen isn't going to help you now.
His muggy little notebook.
Parker.
Get him a little slug.
Thought you'd come back and beat me again, did you?
Do you want this?
Oi, don't write in the words like that, you naughty
when,
sausage.
When Big Pav used to watch me running for the ball, because I was quite slow, he used to go, oh, fuck me, it's a slug with asthma.
Oi, you know what?
How many?
I'm going to say four.
He's starving.
For his dinner.
Hey. Name your four, go on.
Have fun with it.
Liverpool, Crystal Palace, Aston Villa and Standard Liège.
Oh, listen, mate. One, two.
I love it if Stanley Age is wrong.
Three.
I think it is, isn't it?
Correct. It's a 3-2 win to Vish, to Marcus. Genk, Standard Liège, Kortrijk, Mechelen, Genk again, Aston Villa, Liverpool and Crystal Palace, where he currently still plays. So that's a 3-2 win to Marcus. Well played.
Come on then. Come on. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Betway. Myself, Pete and Jimmy will be back on Monday, hopefully celebrating an England win. But until then, have a lovely weekend and we'll see you soon. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vish.
Jog on.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.